Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, at this time, I'd like to turn the program over to Mr. Joseph Lamb. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Robbie, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Understanding and Troubleshooting the Web Container in WebSphere Application Version 6.0. Today's presenter is Ashish Gadasara. Ashish was appointed as Staff Software Engineer, IBM WebSphere Application Server Level 2 Customer Support in June 2003. In this capacity, he is responsible for technical support of IBM WebSphere Application Server products. During his career, he supported customers for Web Container Components and IBM Software Development Kit Components, with consistently ensuring customer satisfaction by closely working with customers and developers to resolve customer problems. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Ashish.
Thank you, Joseph. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the WebSphere Technical Exchange. Today, I'm going to present you with the overview and how to troubleshoot Web Container in the IBM WebSphere Application Server version 6.0. Again, my name is Ashish Gadasara, and my email address is acghodas@us.ibm.com. I welcome you all to send me an email with any questions you have about this webcast. Please put Web Container webcast in the subject line. Joseph, please go to slide 2. In this presentation, my intention is to cover Web Container from very high-level perspective till the Web Container what we see from the level 2 perspective. So, first of all, we will discuss about the overview of the Web Container. Then we will discuss about overview of the web application, how the web application looks like. Then we'll see how these two fit together. Then we will move on with discussing common errors with the web container. Then we will discuss how the high-level symptom analysis can be made to debug these common errors. At the end, we will discuss about the sample application, very simple application that I designed, and we'll discuss the web container trace taken on that sample application. And we'll show you exactly the very important lines in the traces that we see from level 2 perspective to debug any kind of web container issues. Joseph, please move into the live screen. Overview of the web container. Web container is a part of application server, and it provides the runtime environment for the web application. It processes the servlet, JSP files, and other type of server-side includes. Web container also provides various other services like session management. It provides the embedded web server, which provides the capability of serving the static content. It also provides the inbound transport chain facilities for the request movement. There is always one web container instance per application server process. Joseph, please move to the slide number 4. This represents the high-level pictorial representation of where the web container sits in the bigger picture. As you can see, it's a part of application server and with all the different other components of the application server. Web browser can send the request directly to the web container or via HTTP server. As you may all know, in the typical production environment, there will be a HTTP server between the web browser and the application server. In that case, when the browser sends the request, it has been handled by the HTTP server. There is a WebSphere plugin component running on the web server machine, which takes care about routing the proper request to the web container. Please move it to the slide number 5. Web container provides the following services. Instead of 4 major services Web Container provides. And in the logical steps, the first service Web Container provides is the transport chain. But what the transport chain is, it's really the socket implementation underneath. What it does is, this code is basically reads the request which has been hit at the application server on the open ports. It reads the request and sends the request to the Web Container for processing. The second component is servlet engine or servlet processing component. Based on what requests we received at the web container, there could be 2 type of requests. The request for static content and request for dynamic content. If the request is for dynamic content, let's say for some kind of servlet or JSP, then it has been handled by cellular processing component. This cellular processing component goes through this cycle that I mentioned into the slide. It creates the request object by reading the stream of the request from the transport chain, then creates the response object. It then invokes the service method of the servlet. It goes through the code of the servlet or JSP and then builds the response object. It does the commit on the response object, meaning sends back to the client, invokes the destroy method of the servlet, unloads the servlet, and now the unloaded servlet is ready for JVM to be picked up when the garbage collection runs. The next another service or the component of the web container is HTTP and other static content processing. As I said before, web container has the capability of serving the static content, which is being done by the embedded web server. It has the same capability of HTTP server. Usually, in the production environment, generally, static content has been separated and has been placed onto the remote web server, so that whenever there is a request for the static content, it has been served by the remote web server, and the cycle of plugins sent to the application server and application server then serves this request through the plugin back, this cycle can be saved and the performance can be enhanced. But the web container still have the capability of handling the static content. The fourth component of the web container is the session management. It is nothing but the full implementation of javax.servlet.http.http session interface. Provides the capability of application developers to create the sessions, work with the session, destroy the session, and session tagging mechanism. So up to this point, we have discussed about the high-level overview of the web container and the different four components of the web container. Let's move into the slide number 6. Now we will look at the high-level overview of the web application. Web application is nothing but it's a combination of the static content and the dynamic content. The web component, the term web component can be used for servlets and the JSPs, which is the dynamic content. And the static content can be HTML pages, text files, image files, XML files, like that. These two type of content, when it is being combined as per J2EE, to build the special archive called the web archive, it can be treated as a web application. So, a J2EE web module combines web components and the static content in a special archive format known as the WAR archive. Let's move it to the slide number 7. This is the pictorial representation of the web application. If you expand the WAR archive under the root directory of the WAR, you see the two different things. One is the web INF directory and other is bunch of files. That files can be JSP files, HTML files, or any other static files. So the place of JSP as a dynamic files and all other static files is under the assembly root. There can be a nested directory. You can also put the specified directory there, but that will add up to your request when you do the request URL. We'll discuss that in the next slide. Under the web INF directory, there could be three different things. One is configuration XML and XMI files. Other is the lib directory, and the third thing is the classes directory. Web.xml is the configuration file, also known as the deployment descriptor, where all the definitions of the servlet has been stored. XMI files is the extension files. As you know, WebSphere provides extensions. It provides the additional facilities under J2EE standards. And all these facilities configuration has been set into the XMI file. Spacesconfig.xml stores the JSF, if you have implemented JSF specification or JSF configuration file. Under the lib directory, you will find the jar files. Generally, these utility files, it stores the utility files, which is being used by the servlet classes. Under the classes directory, you will find all the servlet classes. So this is how the web application looks like. Please move it to the slide number 8. Now, discussing about the common errors with the web container. Before we go on, again, just a little bit of how far we discussed. We discussed so far is high-level overview of the web container. we discussed the four different components of the web container. Then we discussed the overview of the web application and the how web application should look like. And now moving on, the common errors with the web container. Whenever there is an error condition occurs while working with the web container, usually you see the unexpected results into the browser. For example, the user types the URL into the browser, hits enter, and he gets one of the error conditions. There is a three different categories of the error condition. Either you get HTTP 404 error message on the browser, either you get HTTP 500 error message, which indicates the internal server errors, and or you get the response back, but it's the incorrect information. So the common errors can be divided into these three major categories. Let's move into the slide number 9. This is the pictorial representation of the common errors on the web container. As we discussed before, there is a three categories. Discussing first category, HTTP 404 error messages that can occur due to these three different reasons. Page cannot be found, fail to find resources. First two things are really similar. What it's trying to tell is you are trying to request a resource. When I say resource, could be servlet, JSP or HTML page, and it's not there. We don't found it. The third category of 404 is web group virtual host error message, and that's mostly configuration issues or wrong URI issues. We'll discuss that later. The second most category is the 500 error message. This category covers whole variety of different error messages. The major two reasons of 500 error message is because of the JSP processing error and the illegal state exception. We'll also discuss that in detail in the future slides. The third major category is the incorrect information. This could be due to the HTTP session. When you request, you get the old session information on your page. Maybe you get the session of other users. You can access the other users' information. Web resource is not reloading. You are trying to get the most up-to-date information from your application, and application sends the old information, meaning it's not getting the right data from the database or something like that. It can be the encoding issues. The page is meant to be displayed into Chinese or Japanese, and on the browser, all I see is the garbage characters. It can be also due to the static resources problem. For example, images in my page, and the images are not getting loaded. So all these kind of categories fall into the incorrect information. Let's move into the slide number 10. High-level symptom analysis. Let's first take the HTTP 404 error message. Now we will discuss about how one can debug these three major kind of error messages. As we already discussed, there is a three variants of how the 404 can occur. Let's move it to the slide number 11. HTTP 404 error message can be easily debugged just by using the server logs and configuration files. These logical steps, one by one, if you follow, most likely you can able to debug the 404 error messages by yourself. First logical step is verify that the web module has been started successfully or not. First thing you want to find out, the resource you trying to access, what is the web application for that. Once you know the name, go to the system out file and see if that web module has been started successfully or not. You can find the lines like starting web module and started web modules. And between these two lines, you can find if there is any error condition. If your web module has not been started, it's obvious that you are going to get 404. So that's the problem. If your web module has been started successfully, then next logical step is to check if your web server is working properly or not. As I said before, in the major situation, you have the web server in between the browser and the application server, and it is responsible for forwarding the request, actually the plugin component. But in order for send the request to the plugin, the web server should be running and working properly. So verify the web server is working or not by hitting some other static page on the web server. The third logical step to verify is if the plugin is working or not correctly. Now, to actually the second and the third point can be easily checked if you try to hit the application server directly. When I say this, I meant to say bypassing the web server and plugin. You can hit the same page which you are trying to access from the application server directly by specifying the transport port. So if you can get the good results back, then there is something problem with the plugin or web server. Now the next logical step is check the URL. So up to this point, up to once you pass the first, second and third line, now you know your frame module is correct, everything works fine, web server is good, plugin is good, there is no problem with plugin. Then the fourth thing you want to check is the URL is correct or not. It can be easily checked just going through the admin console and the configuration files. First thing you can you want to find out if the context route is correct or not. You can do that by going to the admin console application, and under the application you have the option of view deployment descriptor, and under the deployment descriptor you can find the context route. Once your context routes are correct, for example, if you are trying to access the JSP, see if the JSP exists under the installed app directory, under the root, as I mentioned before. If that JSP is under some nested directory, you need to provide that nested directory structure followed by the context root in the URL in order to get to that JSP. After you verify your URL, whatever you are trying to request, the way you are trying to request is correct or not, then the last logical step is to see if the application server is working or not properly. Most of the time, you can see the application server started for the e-business. But if you go back in the track, you might find some kind of error situation or error condition into the system out or system error logs to see, which can give you the idea if something wrong with the application server. Also, the health of the application server may not be good at the time of when you are getting all this problem, 404 error messages. All the CPU is getting used, is getting overloaded at the time. So these logical steps will help you definitely to debug 404 error message. Let's move into the slide number 12. This is the block diagram of the thing that we just discussed. First question is, web module is started correctly or not? If it is not, the problem is right there. Review the JVM logs to debug that situation. If yes, then go to the next step. Web server okay? No? Then HTTP server support. Get to the HTTP server support. If it is working fine, then ask the next question. Application accessible through the web container but not the web server? If this is correct, then HTTP plugin problem. If no, then follow the browser URL verification step as I just mentioned. And then follow the application server is okay or not. And last step is to the trace analysis. Nothing works, then obviously the support people can help you with the trace analysis. Please move it to the slide number 13. Now moving to the next popular category of the web container error messages are the HTTP 500. The first variant is the JSP processing error message. This is because you requested some JSP page, and during the compilation or during the runtime of the JSP, you receive there is some error condition happens, and you get this 500 error message back. The first logical step you can do is to request some other JSP files into the same web application and see if other JSP files are working properly or not. Just to get an idea if everything is something wrong with the application server or just one JSP page. You can also check these two lines into the standard out file, which indicates the JSP processor started normally or not. The lines are extension factory was registered successfully, extension factory has been associated with the patent, JSP, JSPX, JSW, JSV. And also the third logical step is you most likely will get the error message with the stack, complete stack, in the system out or system error and with the JSP error code. Debug using that JSP error code. And that will help to debug the 500 error message. Please move it to the slide number 14. The second major reason of 500 error message is the illegal state exception. This illegal state exception can be due to two reasons. The first reason could be the application code is trying to touch invalid session object. As I said before, web container provides the session capability. With web application, the application developer can generate the session and work with the session to store important information. In the life cycle of the application might have the design of invalidating the session, or the WebSphere application server has the session manager component which handles the invalidation of the session, and you can configure the invalidation time of the session. So due to two reasons, either by the application or by the invalidation thread, your session can be invalidated. If some reason, one of these two reasons, if your session has been invalidated and later in the application tries to access that session, you will get the illegal state exception. In the stack, you will see all the HTTP session related code, and that's how you know this illegal state exception is coming from the session component of the web container. The second reason of illegal state exception is if application trying to modify the response object after committing it. Once web container commits the response object, meaning sends response object is ready to send it to client, you cannot modify the response object, and at that time the illegal state exception has been thrown. Let's move it to the slide number 15. Two common variants of the illegal state exception. And now these two common variants is about the touching the response object. We will not much discuss about the session illegal state exception because that will cover complete the session and session management. And I believe there will be a webcast next month from one of my colleagues. Now, the illegal state exception related to the response object, there is a two variants. The first one is header already sent. So once the header is sent and it's committed to the client, you cannot modify the header. The application code cannot do like adding the cookie or modifying the cookie because cookie resides into the header. Second variant is cannot forward as output stream or writer has already been obtained. In the page, for example, in the JSP page, you invoke response.getWriter or response.getOutputStream to write the response object. Now, after that, it's not appropriate to forward your request because you have started committing the response. Please move it to the slide number 16. Now, at this stage, we are ready to discuss about the sample application. Let's go back and just summarize what we discussed so far. First, I have discussed on the web container, went through the high-level overview, discussed the four different components of the web container. Then we discussed about the web application and a very high-level perspective of how the web application should look like. Then we discussed about the common errors, three common categories of the error messages or error conditions with the web container. This is 404, 500, and the inappropriate results on the browser. Then we have discussed on how to debug the 404 error messages and 500 error messages. I will discuss about how to debug about the third category during the threat analysis. Now moving forward, I have developed a sample application. It consists of four JSP pages, and the idea is in the one request, I want to navigate through all these four JSP pages and want to show in the trace how the request flows between these pages. The first page is the register.jsp page, which basically collects the data from the user, and on the submit action, it invokes a post to the action register.jsp. ActionRegister.jsp page then gets all the data or gets all the parameters from the response request object which has been sent from the register.jsp, then does the runtime include of the insertRegister.jsp page. This page will just display the parameter being passed to this page and then gets back to the ActionRegister page. After control back to the ActionRegister page after the insertRegister, action register page then forward the request to the forward register.jsp page. This page will then display all the parameter has been passed. Move it to the slide number 17. Here is a quickly we'll see what the code looks like for this 4JSP page. As you see, the register.jsp simple JSP page having table, having various different fields, haven't pasted complete code because it has many parameters. But the basic idea is user has, once accessing the JSP, user gets the table and has to put like first name, last name, middle name, and all the values. And at the last, there is a button, submit button on the submit action. The post action is on the action register, as you can see in the post line. Post method is post, action is equal to action register.jsp. Please move it to the slide number 18. This is the action register.jsp. In the first portion, what I do is get the parameters, request parameters from the request object. Request.get parameters on the name and storing the values into the string. After that, I'm putting one debug statement, system out print line, just letting me know that, hey, right now I am in the action register page. But then I include, do the runtime include, JSP include, which is the runtime include of the insert register page, also passing these three parameters by overwriting the values. After back from the insert register, I print out another couple of debug statements telling me that I'm back from the include and I'm now going to the forward. Then I invoke the forward register page and passing all the values. I then try to print out the debug statement, but I will never reach to this line of the last printout line because the forward action will not return to the original page. Forward means forward. And this is the idea of just writing this system out line, which I will not find in the trace. Let's move it to the slide number 19. Insert register page, simple page, just write debug statements and also print out the parameters that I just passed. Please move it to the slide number 20. Forward register.jsp. The first portion, what I'm doing is getting all the request parameter by doing the request.get parameter and specifying the name and storing all that values into the string. After I do that, the next step I am doing is creating the table and populating the table with the parameters values. So just showing the client back with the result page that, hey, this is the values that you entered. And that's what the sample application does. Getting the values, pass through the four different JSP pages and sends all the parameters back to the client, showing the confirmation kind of page. Let's move it to the slide number 21. Now, this is very interesting from this slide. As you know, if you have ever encountered the issues with the web container and you have to open the PMR, we always ask to gather the must gather information, must gather for the web container. In the must gather, the most important thing we ask is to turn on the trace. And we always ask to turn on the trace and then recreate the problem, which captures the failing scenario into the trace file. And now I will discuss what we look into the trace once we receive the trace from the customers. The trace in the first portion always displays the server environment. And as you can see, the last line before the end display current environment tells me which trace specification has been turned on. In this case, I have turned on web container all, HTTP channel all, generic DNF off, which tells, the must gather tells this trace to be turned on if you have the web container problem. So this is the web container trace. Now, in this slide, in the following slide, I have took important lines from the trace file and pasted it into this presentation. So this is not the complete trace file, and also I given the number to the lines, which is not the real numbers. There might be many lines between the line number 1 and line number 4. Just give the line number just to reference you and for the good communication. First, let me explain how the trace line looks like. It has the four major components. The first component is the timestamp and the date information of when this event happened. Second portion, as you can see into the line number 1, the first portion says 4:17:06 and the EDT time. And the second portion is the thread ID, which thread is handling the request or handling this line of entry at this moment. Third portion says which was code this message is getting printed from. And the fourth message is the real message of the trace message. So let's start how we look the trace and the important lines from the web container trace. First logical way thing we look is the application has been started correctly or not, as you remember from debugging 404 message from the previous slide. Line number one indicates me that at this point, attempt has been made to start the default application. Handling thread is startup thread 7 zeros followed by 8 is the thread ID. Line number 4 indicates me that web module's web default web application has been bound to the virtual host default host. So at this moment I know the default application has been handled by the default host and which has the host aliases of 9080809443. So from this much information, I now know the transport port 9080. So if any reason I have to bypass the plugin and test, I should test on the 9080 port. Line number 5 indicates that the default application has been started correctly. So if there is any error situation, I can find out between these two lines, 1 and 5. The next important line is the line number 6, which states me that now the URL has been set as a mytestregister.jsp. This is my first request. I placed this 4 JSP under the root of default application and I created one app directory called mytest, and that's why I have to put mytest after the context root. As you all might know, the context root of the default application is just a slash. So slash mytest slash register.jsp is the right URL to access the register.jsp. Line number 7 and onwards indicates that the header value is started being set. In this case, I just give the example of the header of the host value has been set. Please move it to the slide number 22. Line number 9 indicates that now we are setting the cookie into the header. Also, from now on, check the thread ID will be the same. 6 zeros followed by 25 is the thread ID. Now, this thread is responsible for handling request for register.jsp. It will be the same thread ID. So, another tip, while you look into the trace file by yourself, your trace file might have many thread IDs in it. Because in the production environment, there are many users, and each user gets a separate thread for the request to be handled. So, it's a good idea to first find out which thread is handling your request, and then get that thread and pull all the information of that thread from the main trace file to the separate file so that you only can then see what's going on with that thread. Line 10 indicates the end of the header has been reached at this moment. So we read the header's information from the request object of the register.jsp. Now from the line 11, we started building the response object. The first step we did is setting the default code of the default return code to 200. Please don't confuse with this line because this is, we are setting by default. It is not the final response code that we have set yet. We haven't even started handling the request from the web container. We are just building the response object at this moment. Most important line is number 12. At this moment, after doing all this, reading the request object, header information, and building the dummy response object to populate. Now, at the line number 12, we have really started handling the request. webcontainer.handleRequestURI, this line is the one that can be also a starting point of reviewing the thread, meaning you exactly know, for example, you're getting the error message for accessing register.jsp. You find this, mark this line and onwards, up to you hit the finish exit, I will discuss that later. During that time, the request has been handled by web container. And if there is something wrong, we should find some kind of exception, error condition between these two lines, beginning and the end of the handling request. So line 12, we started handling requests. In line 12 itself, there is a non-decoded URI and the decoded one. In this case, both are the same. But it would be different if we have requested the home page. For the home page, you don't have to, for example, if my home page is index.jsp, I don't have to write the index.jsp at the end. So I could just request slash, and at that time, non-decoded URL will be just a slash, and web container will decode that to slash index.jsp. So at that moment, you will see this to be the two different values. Moving to the next important thing is web group. Like 15, line number 15 indicates this, web group of this request is slash, which is really the context root. Context root is really slash. Line number 16 also indicates that, hey, you know what, this URL is handled by web application, default application. At this moment, I also know or double check my CSP page resides under the default application. Line number 17 to 19 indicates that the default encoding has been set. As we have reviewed the sample application, I have not set the encoding in my JSP pages. That's why Web Container is now setting the default value, which is ISO 9959. This line is important in the cases when there is a problem when you see the garbage character on the browser, into an internationalization kind of issue, where the intention is to display Chinese characters and we are not getting it. So in this line, 17 to 19, we know which encoding has been set. If the application wants to set the UTF-8, but somehow the web container is picking up the default value. So in that situation, we know how to debug that scenario. Line number 20 indicates the JSP has been initialized at this moment, and it was not compiled before, so it's compiled here. Content type has been set to text and HTML, which is line number 21, 22. Moving to the next slide, 23. Now we hit the first system out statement that we place into the register. Just telling me that right now in the register page, line number 24 is really important for all developers to know, because this first alert first write method is invoked when the response object has first started writing. Line number 25 and 26 indicates that the language, content language, has been set to ENUS. Response object has been write with 1189 characters. I know from line number 27. 28 also indicates that we are writing response back. Now, after writing, we are done for this register.jsp page. From line number 29 to 32, we are going through the cycle of finishing cycle. And the finish exit is the last line we call from the web container for that request. At this time, we are done processing the request and send the response back. So, the line number 12 that I mentioned before, and the line number 32 is the one between these two, all the request handling has been happened. And if there is any error, I should have been fine between these two. Line number 33 indicates that now the final response code 200 has been set. Line number 33 says everything went fine, HTTP 200 okay, everything fine, done, sent. Now 34 indicates that previous request completed, now thread is ready to handle the another request. Now guess what the another request is? Another request is we know that the post will be the action register.jsp. We'll see in the next slide. Please move it to the slide number 24. 36 to 38 line, we started setting the URI to the action register.jsp. You will see the same kind of line that we have seen before, like line number 39. At this moment, we have started handling the request for action register.jsp. Request for action.register.jsp has been treated as a separate request because it's the post. 39 to 46 is kind of very similar to that what we have discussed. At line number 47, action register has been initialized, been compiled. So now we are at the second JSP page, as you know. We are handling the second JSP page. The first system out we have hit here at the line 48, saying that I'm in the action register page before include. Most important things now, in the action register page, in the trace itself, I will see what are the different request parameters I have been passed, or which are the request parameters being visible to the action register. From line number 49 onwards, I can see exactly name and value pair has been stored into the request object. As for line number 49, one of the parameters has the name state and the value NC. Line number 52, fname as one of the name of the request parameter, value is Ashish. So this all the parameters that has been passed from the register.jsp has been set also for the action register. Please move it to the slide number 25. This is all the parameters, city, address, and everything. Please move it to the slide number 26. At this moment, we are started handling for insert register.jsp. Now, in the action register purge, we have done the runtime include. So, at the line number 86, 87, we have started handling that request for the insert register. Now, as you notice, this is not the complete new request, treated as a complete new request as before. the register.jsp and the actionregister.jsp is treated as a completely new request. But here, this is the runtime include and also followed by the forward, which is not the separate request, but it's a part of the request that we just flow from one JSP to another JSP. 88 lines, we initialize this JSP as before. System outlines indicates that I'm in the insert register, and I just pass some parameters, printed out this three parameters, which is my name, and then control backs to the action register, saying that I'm in back from the insert register page, and I'm before the forward. Line number 94 indicates that now I'm handling the forward register.jsp page. 95, this page has been initialized successfully. After that, I will see the same parameter list as I said before, because on the forwarded page, I am passing all that parameters. So forward register.jsp have the access to all that parameters. 96 says finish exit has been called for this request. I'm done. And 97 indicates that everything ran fine and the HTTP 200 error means message code has been sent, which is the good message that web container has sent. So that's about the trace analysis. We are at the very end of the presentation right now. The reference is the Redbook reference that I mentioned. From the Redbook, I have covered in the beginning portion of high-level overview of the web container, overview of the application, web application, and the symptom analysis. You can find it in detail in this Redbook. Please move it to the slide number 28. This chart includes link to the number of sites that provides valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support page points you to the webcast and conference information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up to the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Support link on all product support page lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. Let's move it to the slide number 29. At this moment, I want to turn back to Joseph for the question answer session.
Thank you, Asish, for a great presentation. At this point, Robbie, we would like to open the lines for questions. And as a reminder, please refer to the FOIL number if your question is in regard to material on a specific slide. Thank you, Robbie.
And at this time, it appears there are no questions over the phone.
Thank you. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Asish, for presenting today.
Thank you, Joseph.